You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
Hate UConn, so maybe I might have been a little biased there.
You hate UConn and you like Indiana, so I got a good chance to maybe see some bias come out. I don't remember your take either. I don't remember if you were one of the people who's like, hey, you got to call it. Three seconds left. It's a moving screen. Because I thought that the call at the end of the Pacers game that people were mad about the moving screen, I thought technically it was a moving screen, but I think it's a screen we see in the NBA, you know, 95% of the time that they don't call. Now, I don't necessarily want them to call them,
yeah,
especially in that situation where it didn't lead directly to a shot. But, yeah, I mean, it was one that was a moving screen.
Yeah, I excuse me. I don't doubt that, like you said, technically it could be called a moving screen. It's just moment in time of the game and this whole notion you've been, for the most part, letting these guys play really hard all the way through the game. It just really felt, and we've been seeing some of this recently, it just felt like the refs took the game out of the players' hands a little bit. That's all. It just, and of course it stings a little more because it impacted my team, but, you know, I that's my only thing. And you could see that on social media from a number of people, not me, but others, where they were saying, can you just, man, let the players decide the game. That's all. It just, within reason, you know, it doesn't turn into a bloodbath or anything, but that just felt very, very one of those either way calls at a minimum. So it was tough. I was really more angry about the missed call of the kicked ball. That's the one that got me most, and there was nothing you could really do about it. And then there was a time, and the Knicks were able to challenge it, and rightfully so, reverse the call, where the Knicks were trying to get the ball in, and Nembhard got up on Brunson, the ball went out of bounds. The one ref couldn't even see it, who was right there. He asked for help. He wouldn't even make a decision, and somebody else came in and said it was Pacer ball. It wasn't Pacer ball. It went off Nembhard's foot.
Great sell job by the Pacers bench.
Yeah.
The woman assistants on the bench was doing a good job of selling it.
Yeah, there was no doubt. But it just felt like it was not the refs really became more of the story at the end. That's what I hate in any game.
Yeah, no one wants the refs to become the story. It's tough in physical playoff games that are close where every possession feels so big. So like it's like everything is dissected. But yeah, there are a couple of just mistakes that you can't make. The last 2 minute report is going to be very long. And I wonder about Jalen Brunson and at what point we just have a conversation about his tactics. Because as a Hawks fan, I had to listen to people whine and complain about Trae Young the last couple of years. And this guy does everything Trae Young does. And like, I get it, Jalen Brunson's cooler. He is. He doesn't seem as unlikable as Trae Young because Trae's got the hair and he's skinny and he's always yelling at the refs in a mean way. Like, I get it. The presentation of Trae Young is not as cool as Jalen Brunson. But I listen to Knicks fans chant bleep Trae Young for a lot of the same stuff that Jalen Brunson's doing in terms of jumping into players on jump shots and just trying to draw fouls and do all those things that some people used to call cheap and not playing basketball. But so far, everyone's still just like, wow, Jalen Brunson, 40 points. He does it again. And he's awesome. Like, I've become a Jalen Brunson fan, but I just want some consistency.
I would agree.
You're going to hate him by the end of the series.
I already hate him.
Okay.
Although I think I hated Josh Hart more last night because he was everywhere. But Brunson, you know, I think I said to you when I called at halftime when I was
John, we're winning by six. Did you watch that second quarter? We got it.
To be clear, here was the tone. John, it's Bob. You watching? Hey, I'm pretty happy. That was it. It was not like, we got it.
We look great, Bob.
Do you think I can take some time off to go to the championship parade in June?
But I said on that call, I said, if they can just try to tamp down Brunson, they can win this. You know, they can win. It just seemed like last night it's impossible. I don't know, man. He is playing at a different level. I mean, what, fourth straight 40-point game in postseason? He's in one of those rarefied air categories again, like we were just talking about Anthony Edwards.
I know at one point he had 18 points in the fourth quarter. I don't know if he scored after that to get into 20. I think he might have finished with even more than 18. because there's a couple minutes left and that happened, and I know he hit some free throws down the stretch. 14 of 14 down the free throw line. 14th free throw attempts should kind of prove what I'm talking about in terms of him just baiting in these foul calls, but it's really just Josh Hart and Dante DiVincenzo. Like, I don't know what the hell's gotten into those guys, but they combined for 49 points. Dante's hitting pull-up threes in transition, like one-on-four fast breaks. And you're like, what the hell is he doing? And he's making them.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy, man. And yeah, so the stat that came out this morning, so Brunson is one of four players now with he ranks second, I should say. The most consecutive games with 40 points in postseason history. Top of the list is Jerry West with six. And then there's three people behind that, three players tied with four. And Jalen Brunson's one of them. You can imagine who one of the other ones is.
LeBron.
Surprisingly, no.
Jordan.
Yes. And then there's one more, and he's a Knick. Was a Knick.
Bernard?
Bernard King.
So I don't think Melo did it.
So, I mean, Brunson's just obviously on a heater, and he's in some really rarefied air. And, so the Villanova 3 just killed Indiana last night. Again, Josh Hart's just a hell of a player. When you consider all that he's doing, and again, we've talked about it, he's 6'4". I mean.
Yeah, I was surprised that you said you already hate him because I get it being on an emotional side, but like he's the type of player that everyone wants to root for and rally for, like as he's 6'4 and just the toughest guy on the floor making every loose ball. Now, Sam, now did you watch last night because you sent the text about being done with the NBA or why you don't like them because, oh, they called a moving screen. Everyone wants them to call moving screens, but then when they call one, you start crying about it. Wah.
Well, because I just feel like that.
I had the Pacers money line.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, that was the cries of a man that had the Pacers money line.
Your tweet about Rudy Gobert was a man who had the Timberwolves.
No, I hadn't taken anything, but guess what? I still took the Timberwolves. I just got a couple extra points.
Nice.
Yeah, so like, no, the Timberwolves. I've been riding them.
Yeah, you should.
But no, I didn't take the Timberwolves before the game. But I think Rudy Gobert. Although I think people said the wind was too much for him to fly back, and that's kind of why they couldn't get the private plane in the air because it was too windy, it was unsafe, is what I saw some people saying. I don't know if that's true or not, but like, hey, I'm going to miss game two of the playoffs when we have a chance to really put our foot on the throats of the defending champions. And, oh, I had a kid. And, okay, you had a kid. Get back and do your job. That's all I thought. Especially
in the morning.
Especially for Rudy, who like is still kind of a laughing stock, and people still think of it in a negative light, and people who still blame COVID on, kind of. I mean, honestly, if we keep it real. I just thought Rudy had such a good game one. This is like his series to really show, like, hey, I'm that guy again. And then, like, he has a great game one. And then game two, he's like, no, my wife had a baby. I got to be here. I just thought.
And it wasn't even, like, at night either. Like, it happened that morning, you know?
That's what I'm saying.
Have a couple hours with her. Enjoy it.
I just thought it wasn't the time to put perspective and family ahead of your job.
No, I was with you. I laughed. I got a chuckle out of it.
But walk me through you having the Pacers money line and being mad about these calls.
I didn't put any action on Pacers or the Knicks. I really haven't been betting NBA because I have no clue what's happening. But, I mean, yeah, I watched that game. I thought I think you got to settle the argument now that a college team can beat an NBA team because the Nova Knicks are just incredible. These three guys just show up every single night and just produce every single time. Josh Hart's incredible. He feels like the Jemai Mashak of the NBA.
I think that's a little offensive to Josh Hart to call him the Jemai Mashak. I don't remember Jemai Mashak having 24 points, 13 rebounds, and 8 assists in a game. This man damn near dropped a triple-double while playing all 48 minutes. Mashak, look, I love Mashak, but like that is something that we need to like really appreciate is like, Jemai Mashak goes in there and plays crazy when he's in the game. But he's playing like 22 minutes a game. He's only playing like basically half the game. So you can go all out. Like it is crazy. Josh Hart still has the energy to grab all these offensive rebounds and make all these hustle plays while also not coming off the court.
They were interviewing him during like a TV timeout. Give the guy a damn break. Let him sit on the bench.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, how long they can survive getting three bench points. Like it was another one of those games where they got outscored. I think the Pacers at one point had 44 points off the bench or something like that, and the Knicks had three.
Yeah, I saw like 36-3 at some point.
It ended up 46-3.
Yeah. That's yeah, crazy. So like that's not a recipe for success. The Knicks really need to try to end this series as quickly as possible, because I do think the Miles will eventually catch up and you'll have those guys, you know, play themselves into the ground. But not right now. The adrenaline from the Knicks crowd and the adrenaline from the playoffs holding them up. We'll see game two.
Yeah, I try to tip my hat to Josh Hart, because I believe if you're a Knicks fan, you got to be just so thrilled you have someone like him. If you're a Pacers fan, the equivalent to that, he's not Josh Hart, but kind of the same type of player that I'm sure another team would be annoyed with, is the way TJ McConnell played. We talked about him a little bit earlier, because he's just a pest, and he's really not an offensive-minded player, but he's had a couple really, really good games back-to-back. The really telling tale, though, was and I passed this along to my friends last night. This was from an Indianapolis writer. Tyrese Halliburton in the fourth period, no points, no shots, no assists, two turnovers. I mean, that's
fraud.
I just don't think he's right since the injury. I really believe that's some of it. And, you know, just even all the way down, it wouldn't have really mattered, but the last play he made in the game, he got off his feet and got kind of like stumbled, and it just doesn't look like him, man. So now I think between being a little banged up and maybe just this is his first time playing at this level, I just think it's in his head a little bit. And it's a horrible time for that stuff to happen. I got to tell you, man, they need him.
It's one that changes your standing in the league too.
Yeah.
And the way you're thought of and the way people talk about you. But that's happening on the flip side in the other series that happened last night. It was another really great performance by my Minnesota Timberwolves and my boy Anthony Edwards. I say mine because now I'm officially on the wagon. I've officially locked in a Timberwolves to win the championship bet. I did it halfway through the first quarter. I got 6-1. Not great odds, but they already went down to like plus 430 or something like during the game after the way they were dismantling that Denver team, who just I think is just overmatched. In a similar way, we're talking about the Knicks. Like, it was another game where you just realized the Nuggets bench just gives them absolutely nothing. They got nobody coming off the bench helping. Like, Drew Holiday is their best option. Like, and that tells you all you need to know. Anthony Edwards, Minnesota, just deep, talented, lengthy. And I think that they are my pick right now to win it all.
They look good, man. And it felt like a whole different dimension last night. And what was ironic was you could argue their biggest defensive force is Rudy Gobert, and he wasn't even in the game last night. He didn't play. So the fact that they just positively smothered Denver, I think what I saw, Denver had 19 turnovers to 16 assists. I mean, that's that kind of upside down in the NBA is really rare. So it's a testimony to the way Minnesota, you could just feel it watching it on TV. I mean, Denver had to fight for every single shot they could even get off in the first half. It was unbelievable.
It felt that same way in game one. Denver obviously scored more points, and that was a closer game, but it felt like Denver had to play really, really good offensively to even stay in that game. Because Minnesota, I mean, for most of the year was the number one defensive team in the NBA, and yeah, the offense is getting carried right now by some stars in terms of Cat and Ant. But the defense has been great all year, and even without Gobert last night. I mean, that was probably the worst game I've seen Jokic play in 3 or 4 years. Like, just the counting numbers, I guess, weren't terrible when you just say, hey, he had 16 points and 16 rebounds and 8 assists. But, like, if you watched, he was uncomfortable. He was making mistakes. They were discombobulated. I told you they were going to shut down Jamal Murray. They just have too much length and speed and size, and he had another abysmal game. They held him from 3 of 18. You know, I was kind of seeing the board last night, Sam. Before the game, I was like, okay, give me the Knicks first quarter minus 1.5. Okay, ching. And then at halftime, Bob called me, and I was like, wait, the Pacers are winning, because I didn't watch the second quarter because I thought it might be a blowout. So then I was like, okay, give me the Knicks money line. And then they fell behind 9. I was like, okay, give me the Knicks plus 4.5. And then I was like, okay, give me the Timberwolves 7.5. And then Timberwolves money line. I was just boom, 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 just seeing everything, just boom. Everything was working good for me. And, like, a part of that was, like, I waited, like, 3 minutes for the money line. And, like, Aaron Gordon was having to score all the points. He was 5 for 5, and like he's hitting open threes. Like, okay, they're still getting beat, and he's 5 for 5. I was like, this isn't going to work. I was like, Timberwolves, hammer, hammer, hammer. And then, yeah, from that moment on, I was like, okay, he can't score anymore, and the rest of the offense is completely lost. And it played out exactly how you thought it should play out if Aaron Gordon's having to score all your points at the beginning.
A sage sports bettor, that'd be you, once told
me. Well, at least the last week or so.
Once told me that that's called chasing, right?
No. See, chasing to me is when you're losing. Chasing to me is when you're losing. Yeah, that's called seeing the board, Bob. To me, chasing is when you're losing and you're trying to get it back. No, I was winning last night, but I was like, okay, here's a heat check. Here's a. I'm seeing things properly. I'm John Nash in A Beautiful Mind before you realize he's actually just crazy and like all those people aren't really around and he's kind of schizophrenic. Spoiler alert. No, last night I was like, boom, I'm seeing everything, and Carl Anthony Towns has got that look in his eye. I think I said that to myself last night as I was watching. I said, oh, Cat, he's got that look in his eye. Here we go. And he did. And, you know, it's been a good resurgence for him and Gobert, because Cat was a punchline the last couple years too. And it's crazy to me what a 22-year-old Anthony Edwards has done to that whole franchise. He's given them so much confidence and, like, leadership. And, like, they're a different team.
Definitely. Nas Reed, another great game. Nikhil Alexander-Walker hit some huge shots when they were just setting the tone early.
Yeah, I mean, no, they kicked their ass.
Yeah, it was just everybody contributed. And you talked about how bad Denver looked. That was their fewest points in a home game in almost 10 years, since 2015.
That altitude meant nothing to Minnesota, and it was as impressive of a defensive performance as you'll see. There was like a 5-minute stretch between the end of the first quarter and early second quarter where they really built that lead where Denver couldn't even dribble the basketball. And like Jamal Murray's yelling at the refs every chance he gets. Mike Malone with one of the more aggressive like challenges of an official that I'll ever see. Didn't get a technical, but like he came out ready to fight the ref,
yeah.
Which was so funny watching, because Anthony Edwards had a play at the rim where he got fouled. He has what he should have had, an and one. Denver calls a timeout. Anthony Edwards is trying to yell at the ref, like, hey, it's a foul. And then Mike Malone just blows by both of them. It's like, that's a bleeping charge on a play before. And Anthony Edwards is kind of like, never mind, I'm not going to argue. I'm just, like, going to kind of laugh. And then he's like, give him a technical. He just kind of drops his argument just to watch Mike Malone go chest to chest with this ref. Which, to the ref's credit, I guess, he didn't give him a technical or anything. He's like, hey, it's the playoffs. But, like, it was wild seeing him get away with that.
There was a play, it was late in the second quarter, where it just really typified what the tone of the game had become. Mike Conley gets a steal. Denver's on offense. Mike Conley gets a steal and just takes the ball, I don't know if you saw this, and just kind of threw it down the court and did like something you would see in a pickup game. He threw it and then just spun and turned his back and started walking away, you know, walking to the bench. And it was to Ant, who went and then dunked and hung on the rim. And I mean, it was just like something you would, again, see in a pickup game when you were absolutely getting run off the floor. It was just a showboat move, but it was kind of enjoyable to watch. I got to tell you, it just, to me, typified how much of a run out this game was. It was ridiculous.
I don't know what kind of pickup games you're playing in, because we don't get invited, Sam, or at least I don't. Maybe you do. But I haven't been like fast break dunked on like that before, so I don't play at that level. Yeah. The people in my pickup games aren't dunking like Anthony Edwards and showboating like that. That's a different level. And it just really epitomizes the confidence that team's playing with right now. I mean, they're 6-0 in the playoffs. They got the Suns. They kicked Kevin Durant's ass. And you know, halfway through the game last night, I was like, you know what? Maybe I owe Matt Ishbia an apology, because we saw Minnesota dismantle Phoenix and kind of laughed about how bad Phoenix was. But, hell, maybe they're just going up against a juggernaut right now, and maybe there was nothing they could do. Maybe Matt Ishbia is right. 26 teams would trade rosters with Phoenix. It just don't seem like Minnesota's one of those 26.
So now the question looms. There's no way they get swept, right? There's no way Minnesota wins 4 out of 4.
Going back to Minnesota, that place is going to be rocking. Like, I don't know what you've seen the first two games that would make you think there's no way they get swept, because a sweep feels pretty likely for me at this point. Now, I don't know what you mean, just like, hey, Denver's not – they got more pride than that. But, man, like, it's feeling – and it shouldn't, because this team's not this same age, but it's feeling – a lot like that 2011 Mavericks-Lakers series where Dirk and Jason Terry goes in and just kills the Lakers and knocks them out and sweeps them and just wins the first two in L.A. and then goes back to Dallas and finishes the job, and the defending champion gets swept out, and that team goes into turmoil. It shouldn't feel that way with Denver in terms of, you know, Jokic isn't as old as Kobe was. They hadn't gone to two straight finals like the Lakers had, or I guess I should say three straight finals like the Lakers had. And, you know, we're a little fatigued. But it's feeling a lot like, hey, team of destiny, best team that's peaking right now is locked in this defending champ. It ain't the champ we thought they were.
No, I agree. And don't get me wrong, this series is over. I really believe that's the case. But I would like to see if Denver's got a little bit of pride and can rally and at least get one in Minnesota, and, you know, which might even be more painful to lose it on your home court in Denver. But, this, again, like I was saying yesterday, I was saying that maybe we're watching the two best teams in the league play between Denver and Minnesota. I got that wrong, but I think we're still looking at one of the two best teams in the league, but it ain't Denver. Minnesota is like at another level, and it's kind of fun to see. It's kind of fun to see a team that's not typically in the conversation have a run. That's good for, I really believe that's good for the NBA. Some TV networks may not agree, but if you got somebody like Anthony Edwards, that's really bankable in my opinion.
Timberwolves -5 in game 3, -700 to win the series right now. So they seem like, it seems like everyone kind of realizes, okay, yeah, Denver seems a little dead. They ain't got nothing for this team, and maybe they'll go out on their sword in game 3 in a close game, but I still think Minnesota's going to beat them, and I just can't see. It's crazy to say, but I can't see Denver beating them in Minnesota. Like, I do think a sweep is coming. Then they'll get a bunch of rest, which maybe they don't want. Maybe they just want to keep playing. Maybe they wanted the Dallas-Oklahoma City to series that hasn't even started yet. Like, that's the thing is Minnesota, if they do get this done quickly – you know, that series is probably going to go on for a while, so they might have to wait a week and a half, 2 weeks before they get to play again, which is crazy. That's what we're talking about with Minnesota. But, man, they're fun to watch. They're fun to watch.
Yeah, and we'll talk later in the show about the Western series that kicks off tonight, because I think I like Dallas in that one, but we'll talk more about that later.
All right, intern Jace, let's see what you got. Take us to our commercial break. It's the first one he's done, so if it sounds bad, don't yell at Sam. Or maybe just yell at him for being a bad teacher. Maybe that's more it. But we'll come back. We'll talk some Tennessee baseball. Got Kirby Connell joining the show at 8:20. Stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Back on the morning show, let's bring on friend of the program and a mainstay in the Vol bullpen, the number one team in the country, Kirby Connell. Kirby, top of the morning to you.
Good morning to y'all.
Let's do a little vibe check. How did it feel yesterday when the news came down that Tennessee was now number one in the polls?
Yeah, you know, we don't really look at that much. You know, it's cool for a little bit, but for us, honestly, it doesn't matter what number we have beside us. You know, we're just going to go out there and play our brand of baseball.
So let's rewind a little bit, Kirby. Good morning, by the way. Thank you for joining us. We were all watching that doubleheader on Friday against Florida. It was a long day, and probably a long day for you, too. You appeared in both games. I was just curious, in a situation like that where you came in, you locked down the save in the first game, and then you come in the second game, you got a little bit of a gap in between. How do you stay ready in that type of scenario? It's one thing that you're pitching, you know, one day, and then you might come in the following day, but to do it within two games in the same day, walk us through that. Just that has to be a little bit different from a prep standpoint, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, we prepared to play Thursday night, got all the way up to, you know, the coaches meeting, and then we get canceled. So we all knew we were going to play a doubleheader. It was just a matter if we played 18 innings or 2 7-inning games. But for us, you know, it was – and for me, it was, you know, trying to stay ready for both games. Luckily, I only threw, like, 5-6 pitches the first game. So V came up to me and was like, hey, like, can you throw can you throw the next game if we needed? And I was like, yes, sir. So, you know, we get a break. We get like a 45-minute break. And then knowing that I'm not going to throw in the first, you know, four or five innings, you know, I was able to have that break, you know, get out there, get out in the bullpen. He gave me enough time to warm up. And then I was ready to go in.
Have you ever said no when he's asked you if you're ready to go, if you could, if you can give him some pitches? Have you ever said no?
No.
I didn't think so. It seemed like I had some friends down at the game on Saturday as well, and they said that you went out to the bullpen for a little bit on Saturday too. Were you thinking about pitching three straight games, or were you just doing something else in the bullpen?
No, I was ready to throw for the game three if needed. You know, maybe in a jam situation or a save opportunity.
Talk about on game three, the very first at bat, Christian Moore gets called out for runner interference. I think that's the most angry I've seen Tony so far this year. What was it like being in the dugout for that?
Yeah, it kind of caught us off guard because, you know, that rule, you know, some people like it, some people don't like it. But in that scenario, it was not the right call. And that's just my honest opinion. But, you know, V was just trying to back up. You know, he's trying to have Simo's back because, you know, Simo found a way to get on against, you know, Jack, and, you know, started us off with a great at bat. And so, you know, Coach V was trying to have his back, trying to have our back as a team. And, you know, I don't know, it was a weird scenario. It kind of got us all fired up. You know, the dugout was going crazy because, you know, we started the game off with a hit, and then all of a sudden, you know, that they want to take it away from us. So, and then the next at bat, Bert gets hit. So it definitely just fired up the dugout a little bit more. It gave us a little bit of intensity, and, you know, we were ready. I think we came ready to play that day. It's just, you know, it took us a little bit longer to get it going.
Kirby, what's kind of the mindset of that, you know, in those doubleheaders as a pitching staff? Is it kind of all hands on deck, and, you know, when arms are kind of getting tired, is it anyone go in, or is that pitching staff with Anderson and Coach Vitello, are they really just trying to stick to a schedule and keep kind of guys on that, you know, regiment that they want them to keep them on?
Yeah, I think for us it was all hands on deck. It was, you know, we had a lot of guys that, you know, that could throw. We had a lot of guys that in the bullpen that were like, you know, I think it was more for the second game. I think we had a total of six guys in the bullpen at one point. So it was, you know, who can throw at this point, who can throw in this situation, who's going to be the best arm in this situation against this guy. I think it was, you know, everybody needed to be ready, and I think they all were.
Kirby, this is your third time on the program, so I do consider you a friend of the show now. So as a friend, I think we can be honest with each other, and I got to say, after the Alabama series, I was a little worried about the pitching staff. I was a little worried about the bullpen. But as we sit here on May 7th, I think all those worries for me have gone away. From your perspective, do you see the growth? Do you see guys improving? Or was it just kind of like, hey, this is kind of always who we thought we would be? And, you know, it was just a, you know, one series sample size to start the SEC, you know, against Alabama.
Yeah, I think for us it was, you know, we're still going up. We're still improving every single day. But I think it was kind of a, you know, eye opener for some of the guys that, you know, haven't played in the SEC, you know, getting their first experience of the SEC and how it works. You know, that you're not gonna fool anybody. You know, these hitters are pretty good, and they're in the SEC for a reason. So for us it was, you know, I think it was we got a little shell shocked. You know, to start the season off in the SEC play. But no, as you can tell, it turned around, and, you know, we're getting going right now.
So looking ahead, obviously we don't want to look past, tonight's game. You got Queens College tonight, but then big series against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's fallen on some hard times, but they're still Vandy and still a big rival and still very capable. If you're, again, one game at a time, I know you guys are focused on tonight, but then if you look ahead a little bit, Any thoughts on what Vanderbilt brings to the table in terms of stuff that you guys have to focus on as a team to keep the train rolling here?
No, honestly, I haven't even looked at anything on Vanderbilt. But, you know, once we get past this game, then I'll, you know, my focus will turn towards them. But, you know, it's playing them for 4 years. You know, it's going to be a grind. It's going to be a three-round fight for us. We just need to go out there and do our thing and, you know, see what we're made of. But I think it's going to be a good series. You know, Vanderbilt's had two tough series back to back. But I think it's going to be hard. It's hard to play in Nashville. But you know, I think it's going to be a fun one.
What do you think happened last week against Lipscomb?
I don't really know. You know, I don't think we showed up to the field, you know, ready to play. I don't think that was just our thing was, you know, we thought we could get by with what we have, but, you know, we kind of underestimated.
How hard is it on these midweek games to come out laser focused? Because, like, an SEC play, you know, seven straight series wins, you guys have been nails, you know, you're one game back of first place, and, you know, you guys have been really, really good, number one team in the country, obviously, but... Yeah, how hard is it to get up for these midweek games? Tonight, I would imagine, is a little bit easier after losing to Lipscomb last week, but it seems like that would be a real challenge.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a struggle, but, you know, we always know we're going to play. You know, we have a four game week, you know, so we look at it as, you know, your first game is going to be on Tuesday, then you worry about the next three after that. But I think, you know, we just show up to the field ready to play, get our minds right, you know, do what we have to do to, you know, get better this week. And I think our coaching staff does a great job preparing us throughout the whole week.
Can you talk about that message from that coaching staff, in particular with these openers that we've been rolling out? Obviously, Stamos there at the start and rolling into Causey, and then you had Seacrest rolling into Nate Snead, and that really seems to be working well for y'all. Can y'all talk about that? You know, just kind of the overall message, I guess, from that coaching staff in particular about those openers and kind of what that strategy is at the start of those games.
Yeah, I think it just gives us an opportunity, you know, for these guys, you know, that, you know, you see it as, you know, Xander and Stamos are starting, you know, they could go two innings, they could go five innings if needed. I think it just helps us in the future when it comes to, you know, if we have to play multiple games in a regional or SEC tournament or super regional, it just helps us knowing that, okay, like if Xander and Stamos are, you know, rolling and we're up pretty big or up by a good amount of runs, then, you know, we can keep them out there, you know, because they've got it to experience, you know, the starting role, you know, in the SEC.
Have the coaches or team leaders taking any precautions with stickers on bats heading into Vanderbilt? Because last time the boys went to Nashville, there was a big controversy, Kirby.
Yeah, no, I don't even think, you know, that what's crazy is we traveled to, when we went to Florida, I was thinking about this. The pitching staff, there was only three of us that were there. I don't even think half the team knows anything that went on in Nashville 2 years ago. So I don't think that's in our mind right now.
Seven in a row against Vandy. That's on our minds, at least. You guys one game at a time, I get that, but seven in a row is what we're thinking here.
All right. I like the sound of that.
So again, in the spirit of looking at what's right in front of us, what can you tell us about we're still trying to learn about Queens College tonight. You know, do they? What do you know about them from your scout? I mean, they stronger pitching wise. They stronger offensively. What's the approach for that game tonight?
You know, I'm not real sure. I haven't looked at the scouting report yet. When I get to the field this afternoon, I will look at it. But I'll get a card about their hitters, and I'll go through and. It's usually me and Xander. Me and Xander will go through and look at it, you know, the scouting report on that and talk about, you know, what we both see, how we can approach them. But no, I honestly, I couldn't tell you anything right now.
Gotcha.
Last one on the way out. Was Tony annoyed that you guys are now ranked number one? Because I feel like as a coach, you want to keep the boys humble. You want to keep them hungry. Was he a little annoyed that you guys actually got the number one ranking?
Yeah, you know, I would say so. I'm not real sure. But no, like I said, you know, it doesn't matter the number beside our name. It's not going to define us. We're still going to go out there and play our brand of baseball, whether we're number one or, you know, 250th. We're still going to go out there and compete with any team.
Kirby Connell, a workhorse out of the Tennessee bullpen. Anything you want to plug on the way out?
I think I'm good.
Appreciate you as always. Keep it running. Keep it rolling. We're all rooting for you. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Kirby.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me on here.
Talk to you soon, I'm sure. Hopefully right before, or, you know, regional, super regional, Bob. Maybe lock that in. Good scheduling-wise. Knoxville's going to be buzzing.
Oh, yeah.
Postseason baseball back in Knoxville. Maybe, you know, Friday morning. Maybe. I imagine on Friday morning of the regional, I imagine he'll have the scouting report a couple days before and actually have gone through that one. It was a little jarring. I guess it kind of makes sense, but, like, I imagine for the regional, they'll have that out a couple days before
they
really study.
I would think so. And, I mean, again, no disrespect to Queens College, but I think that's part of it, too. It's the opponent. You know, they gotta be focused tonight. But there's – I don't know about their progressions, how they're – there's probably a lot of prep going on for Vandy, too, so –
I also think Kirby's probably hoping he's not pitching tonight. I think he's hoping to get a lot of those young guys out there and get them some experience and not have to burn some of your normal arms in the bullpen, I guess.
I disagree. I think he wants to pitch every game. Like I told you, like he pitched a doubleheader. That's crazy in itself. Like I can't imagine that's happened too many times in other series where a guy pitches twice in one day. And then again was out there ready to go for game three too. Like went out to the bullpen for a little bit just in case. I know what you're saying in terms of getting like guys' experience and everything. I understand what you mean, but like I think he actually wants to pitch every game.
He probably wants to pitch. I think our coaching staff is saying our last worst case scenario, we're putting Kirby out there.
I wonder, you know, for someone who seems to be so aligned with that program too, you know, he's part of it. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of synonymous with it, right? I mean, hell, I named my fantasy baseball team after him a couple years ago, you know, Volley Fingers. This is the last run for him, right, as a player. And so I'm just wondering, I didn't get to ask that question, but we'll get him on again. And it's like, you know, everything could be his last as a player, his last trip to Vandy, which may not be a bad thing, but, you know, could be his last regional, all those things. It's I wonder how that sets, you know, we talked about that in basketball season too with Triple J and Santee and Dalton, and he's another one that's like that.
No, when you first booked him for the first time, you know, we kind of thought that was going to be kind of an assistant coach type of role for him this year. And he had talked about, you know, maybe hanging around. And Vitello had talked about, yeah, you know, if he doesn't pursue anything professionally, we're going to keep him around and have him on staff and have him helping the team. And I didn't imagine he was going to be a workhorse, you know, especially in SEC play. I didn't see that coming. And he has been this year.
Yeah, so I think to your point, I think he wants that ball every time he can get it. But, yeah, I agree. I mean, ideally, I'm thinking if I'm Tony and Frank, they probably would prefer not to be using him tonight. We'll see, though.
Yeah, you want all your good arms to be ready to go this weekend. But at the same time, I do think you'll see a little bit of a different approach from Vitello tonight just because of the way they did kind of sleepwalk last week. Not saying you won't get the youth, but I imagine he'll manage a little bit more like a real important game.
Yeah. Choke him out early. And
I imagine the boys will be focused tonight. Like, hopefully you don't have to actually get to your leverage arms in the pen. Like, hopefully your offense, you know, keeps you a big lead. But, like, that's the thing about these midweek games is, like, it's hard to be laser-focused when you know, like, new guys are playing. And, like, it feels like an exhibition game. It feels like a game where you're not sending out your best team and you're throwing your best arms. I just imagine Tennessee will have that focus tonight after getting embarrassed last week by Lipscomb, especially with the number one ranking, especially with the RPI and what's at stake now down this stretch run. I bet you'll get a different sense of urgency. Any other thoughts on Tennessee baseball versus Queens tonight?
What's the weather like this evening, by the way? I mean, I think there's more
rain.
Is there?
Seems like there's just rain every day this week, though.
I know.
According to the old app, the rain comes in at 1 a.m. tonight.
Okay.
So nothing to really worry about before then, I don't believe. That segment is brought to you by Logo Solutions, powered by SM Athletics. If you are a business owner, club director, member of a social or religious organization, listen up. You have a logo. We have a solution. Check out Logo Solutions, powered by SM Athletics. They can help represent your brand, get your merch to represent your brand, your mission, your club. From custom apparel to headwear and promotional items, Logo Solutions is your one-stop shop for all of your branded merchandise needs, made right here in East Tennessee. Be sure to give them a call for all of your logo needs. 865-966-3434. That's 865-966-3434. We'll open the phone lines up here this segment. If anybody wants to weigh in on Tennessee baseball, NBA playoffs, anything that's happening, you can give us a call. 865-288-3131. 288-3131. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. All right, Jace, we're plummeting. We're plummeting. The rankings are coming down. You started off as a solid A+, and you're like Jordan Beck, basically. You had your two hits in your first game, and as it goes on to each break, you're slumping a little bit. What is it about that chair over there, Sam? Is it the chair over there? Because this is an intro we just played with Kirby coming in. What is it about that over there? Do I need to redo everything in terms of the bumpers? What do we need to do over there? I'm just kidding, Jace. Keep your head up.
My head's still up. We're positive over here. It went from an A+. I say we're still hovering around a B+ to an A-. I would assume that we're
John's
got a tough grading scale.
We're down to like a C- right now, Jace. Like, I appreciate your confidence. I do like that you're like, hey, you know what? I'm still batting a B+. After the minute of dead air going into that and then playing the same bumper I played 20 minutes ago,
A minute is egregious.
It felt like a minute over here. It felt
10
like a
seconds
minute.
Feels like an hour.
It felt like a minute over here. We'll compromise. We'll call it 15 seconds. Keep your head up, though, Jace. A C- is still passing, and there's still an hour left to really get it back up and fix the GPA. And it's your first time. So I'll grade on a little bit of a curve whenever I get to the end of the day. So don't worry. You're doing fine. As long as the mics stay on. Now, again, wait till I give the 3-2-1 countdown because you just had me on air counting down.
I think I did that last week in my defense.
In your defense, I'm not judging you as the standard of producing. You're not very good either. I just like your vibe. Just to be honest, Sam, you don't do a good job pressing the buttons either, but I think you're funny and I think you know about sports. Like, that's it. Like, so don't listen to him, Jace. Like, it's okay. I'd make the same mistake all the time because that's what I'm trying to avoid here. I don't want people making mistakes. I want people doing a good job. I'm honestly shocked that Bob has been as patient with you. I think he's made me wear the bad cop hat. Because he's the actual professional here. He's the one that's been at the highest form of radio and TV and everything. And I will say yesterday I did get a couple texts about whether or not Bob was actually mad about the lack of intro. They said, is Bob actually mad at Sam? He sounded mad on the air. I was like, I think that was a joke. But,
oh, that's good then.
Yeah.
People are buying it.
Bob's like, no, I'm pissed.
No, that's awesome. That was the whole point. So people are starting to understand.
No, they didn't understand. They thought you were mad. No,
that's what I'm saying, though. They're buying it. So now they'll understand because you're kind of helping spell that out. That's,
sure.
That's all right.
But yeah, I'm surprised Bob's been as patient with you because I know I get the blame of being the hard ass, but – you don't see the message I get from Bob. He's like, come on, John. Tell Sam to get it together.
Now, part of it is probably I have kids, and, you use a lot of that then.
There we go again with the damn kids.
So
there we go again. Judge him with gloves on. His wife said, oh, leave Sam alone. He's just a kid. It's spilled over to Bob. He's comparing to his 15-year-old daughter. Good job, Sam.
Let me use this right now as a platform to say we'll be looking for replacement interns, namely because I'm afraid we're running them off at this point. It happens, man. Jace, keep your chin up. I'm just watching.
B+, A-, he said after the nice little
I'm optimistic.
That's
optimistic.
All right. I like
it's
optimism.
It's a positive vibe. I like it.
Yeah, you're coming out. First effort, it happens, man.
Yeah,
I'm there.
It is what it is.
I mean,
It is what it is. That's what people who make mistakes say. It is what it is. You know, could I have done anything to make this better? Nope. It just is what it is. That's life, man. That's life. No, it's perfect. Those are the things people say that make mistakes. It is what it is. That's me and like my dating life. It is what it is.
Yeah. That's yeah. All right.
What can you do? Just throw your hands up and shrug. What can you do?
Off into the moon. That's what I always say.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing you can do about it.
Let's talk some college football.
Yeah, so CBS Sports decided, you know, because we've wrapped up, I think, almost all schools at this point. Tennessee's wrapped up a couple weeks ago, but some schools were still doing their spring practice, and now the transfer portal, by and large, is closed. So, so now it's time to start doing analysis, and boy, will we be doing a lot of it all summer long leading into football season. But CBS Sports came to our rescue. They have already put out their power ranking for post-spring football in terms of SEC teams and who's at the top, who's at the bottom, who's in between. Maybe a few little surprises. No question about who's number one.
Georgia.
Yeah.
Ness. Nailed it.
Good one.
Beat you, Sam.
Yeah, it's like you guys are playing Jeopardy, John. Yeah. If there was a buzzer, it would have been like, hit it right there.
So between that and Marvin the Martian, I got 2 points so far.
I am impressed about Marvin and the Martian. That's
he's an icon.
Yeah.
I'd give you a B for today, John.
Oh. I'll take it. You know what? You're not gonna make me feel bad about a B because, you know, I'm dealing with the debilitating back injury over here. Yeah. Okay,
Tiger Woods. Over
yeah. Here. So a B with the shape I'm in is might as well be an A plus plus.
All right,
flu game.
I mean, yeah, kind of.
All right, so number one, Georgia. Number two,
Alabama. No, LSU.
Missouri.
Wait,
Ole Miss.
Stop. You're done.
Ole Miss.
Nope.
Mizzou.
Texas.
Okay. Texas, okay. Syria. Here, let's do this. Everybody gets one pick. It's like, Jesus.
Order in the court.
Ole Miss, Texas. No, wait. Yeah.
I got number three, Alabama. Alabama's going to be number three.
Okay. Texas is number two. Okay. Sam's got one. John's got one.
I got Alabama.
Well, no, you don't jump Dibs. The gun. No, you
Dibs.
Okay, we're going.
You got to call a false start.
All right. Number three.
Alabama.
Wrong.
Ole Miss.
Sam's got two.
What a joke.
It's not a joke.
What a joke.
Ole Miss is a way better football team than Alabama right
okay.
now.
Okay. Check back in
is
with
this,
me in the
is
fall.
As they write. Is
right it, now.
Check.
I
you
said
write
right
it down.
Now.
You, oh, okay.
I said right now.
Well, what?
Our post-spring power rankings, obviously. It's all a few
What do you mean they're a better team? How do we know?
Let me what I'm saying, John.
So wait. No. But no. Go through. Just
this,
look
is,
at,
this is like classic off-season power ranking stuff. Like put Ole Miss over Alabama and start the controversy.
Well, that,
like
okay,
that's
so
classic, that's classic post-spring power ranking.
Okay, so if you're saying that you're wanting to spark dialogue, okay, that's fine. But if you're wanting to tell me they're a better team, like on what, paper? Because no, they're not. Like Alabama's probably got, you know, a million more 5-stars and 4-stars than Ole Miss. So, like, I don't understand on paper how they're even better than them at this point either. If you want to tell me their schedule and, like, hey, this is what's going to be in the playoff rankings, okay, but that's not what you're saying. You're saying post-spring power rankings. So, like, how is Ole Miss better than Alabama?
Well, it's not your criteria.
Oh, I'm asking Sam at this point. Sam at this point. Make the case for Ole Miss being better than Alabama right now on May 7th.
I honestly think Ole Miss could absolutely end up better than Alabama.
No.
You have so much returning production.
Hold on. You said could be. No. We're talking right now. Don't start moving the goalposts.
Let me talk. They have returning production, and they don't have an entirely new coaching staff coming in. They have great transfers coming in. They have Quinshon Judkins, like – Or Quinshon Judkins, I'm sorry, he's leaving.
He's at Ohio State,
he's
right?
Ohio State, but they have guys in terms like Trey Harris, great wide receiver.
They improved the defense of the portal. And Walter Nolan.
I mean, like I think they hit the portal hard, and they've obviously kept their coaching staff. I think there is going to be a little bit of a turnover with Alabama completely starting a new coaching staff.
Is
and
it Warren Nolan or Walter Nolan?
Walter.
Okay, I said that.
What'd you say?
Let me read it.
I said Walter.
Let me read the synopsis for you, and then you'll maybe understand why they picked Ole Miss. Head of Alabama. They wrote, is this the year Ole Miss finally breaks through? The Rebels have certainly flirted.
Oh, the answer is no.
Yeah.
The Rebels have certainly flirted with SEC glory throughout Lane Kiffin's tenure, though Alabama has consistently served as a major barrier. Ole Miss can finally step out from behind Alabama's shadow now that divisions are a thing of the past and the Crimson Tide are nowhere to be seen on the 2024 schedule. In fact, Ole Miss's 2024 slate is so favorable that Kiffin absolutely loaded up on veteran transfer talent with his eyes on a deep run to the expanded CFP. Those newcomers, who could almost comprise an entirely fresh team on their own, are going to need to gel in actual game setting, but there's plenty to work with here.
That's my point. Now, the write-up, Bob, is talking about the future. It's talking about that, well, they can do this. They can make the playoff. Alabama's not on the schedule. If we're talking about who's going to be at the end of December and we're just going to predict the rankings, okay, but that's not what I thought the post-spring power rankings are, because they just wrote and contradicted their entire point. It's an entire new team. We don't know how they're going to gel.
Well, I think what they're doing is it's post-spring. So has anything changed dramatically?
Yes, their entire team changed.
No. But they knew that going into spring football.
Have you ever seen a reasonable post-spring practice power rankings, John?
Yes, Georgia number one. Well, yes, Georgia number one.
Obviously, that's going to be number one across the board.
They actually said that this guy, William Backus, was saying that Georgia and Texas were in a heated race for the number one spot. But they were – the Dogs were given the edge, given Kirby Smart's SEC track record and the fact that Carson Beck looks like the conference's best starting quarterback.
I got no issue with Georgia and Texas. My issue is I think they're just like you, Sam, moving the goalpost. Is it post-spring? Who's the best right now? Who's just going to be the best at the end of the year? Because, yeah, Ole Miss is, when you're talking about their schedule, if that's the reason you're saying they're better than Alabama or better than Tennessee or better than whomever, that's fine. If you're saying, hey, this is where it's going to be at the end of the year, I just don't think you can make that case that Ole Miss is there right now. That's all I'm saying. Like, I think Missouri's got a better case than Ole Miss in terms of right now, because they just at least they have a team that's pretty much intact from last year. Now, did Ole Miss bring in a bunch of new talent? Yeah, is that new talent going to work? Sometimes it doesn't. I don't know. That's all my point is. That's it. Can Ole Miss make the playoff against that schedule? Yeah, sure. Do I think Kiffin's going to lose when he shouldn't lose? Yeah, I do.
Number four.
I give up. I suck at this.
I'm assuming Alabama.
Jace gets a point.
Good job by you, Jace. Still a C-.
It is interesting. So if you read this, if you haven't heard, things are quite different around Tuscaloosa. Nick Saban decided to hang it up, making way for former Washington boss Kalen DeBoer, who inherits a tremendous roster that, despite a handful of key transfer losses, still has the makings of an SEC competitor.
I'm not going to sit here and beat the drum for Alabama. I just think these rankings are dumb. And who'd you say wrote this?
William Backus.
I think William Backus needs to quit contradicting himself, because he just told me Alabama's got a great roster. Now, is he going to sit here and tell me also that he has more confidence in Lane Kiffin than Kalen DeBoer? Because I think that goes and flies in the face of what I imagine at least Walter Backus or whatever the hell his name is or his coworkers have written in terms of calling Kalen DeBoer like the second or third best coach in the SEC. So, like, you're telling me they got a better roster than Ole Miss, and I think we all agree that Kalen DeBoer's got a better track record, or at least we think of him as a better coach than Lane Kiffin. So the computers ain't computing, as far as I'm concerned. What makes Ole Miss better than Alabama? It ain't the roster. It ain't the coaches. What is it?
To be the devil's advocate, you could argue that the same argument that...
You shouldn't argue on the behalf of the devil, Bob. The devil's a bad guy.
That DeBoer has not won in this conference. They're basing it on what he has... You know, it's. I think it's kind of a similar argument.
Has Lane Kiffin won in this conference?
I mean, he won 11 games last year, but he lost to the teams that he was supposed to lose to.
Right, but I mean, like, he didn't win any games of consequence last year, did he? I mean, the LSU, like,
yeah, his
50-point game, whatever. But like
his record against top 25 teams is pretty well chronicled. It's not good.
Right. Like, if we go through the list of Lane Kiffin's biggest wins at Ole Miss, I don't think it's going to be very impressive. So, like, I get what you're saying in terms of proving it in the conference. I also think we should quit talking about the SEC like it's 2013 or 14, just because I think the SEC is not as tough as it once was. So, like, do I think DeBoer is going to be as good as Nick Saban? No. Do I think Alabama's going to take a step back and become just another really good program? Yes. Do I think Kalen DeBoer is better than Lane Kiffin? Yeah, right now, probably. Especially, like, given the resources at Alabama versus Ole Miss. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. I think DeBoer is going to do fine here. Like, I think he's going to – I think his floor is Lane Kiffin.
Yeah. All right, we got to blow through this. Number five.
Missouri.
Jace is in the mix here. Two for Jace.
heat check.
Yeah, this is you talked about. This is the year for them. They've got a lot of talent back. I don't think the schedule's too tough. Yeah, Missouri's good. Number six. Oh, come on.
LSU.
Yeah, I was going to say LSU.
You have little faith. No. Tennessee. Jason's going to roll here.
I got no faith in this guy rotting. I can't keep up with what he's doing. He's all over the damn place.
I figured he would put Tennessee at like 8 or 9 if he's a first-year quarterback.
He's all over the damn place. Yeah, like
So here's what he writes about Tennessee. It's Nico time in Tennessee. After sitting behind Joe Milton for a majority of his freshman season, winning the Citrus Bowl MVP honors in his first career start, Nico Iamaliava is gliding into the 2024 season. An experienced offensive line that returns three starters.
Like ChatGPT so far.
A backfield paced by Dylan Sampson and a wide receiver core featuring six players with at least 3 years of collegiate experience will help him. Keep an eye on Tennessee's defense. It's quietly gotten better every year under Josh Heupel with a deep rotation along the line and an edge rusher like James Pierce wreaking havoc in opposing backfields. This group might take its biggest leap yet. Right? Huh?
That sounds better than number six to me.
Yeah. Great edge rusher and an elite quarterback and a
six
defense
wide
that keeps getting better.
3 years of experience.
That seems like a weird thing to really point out to, but I guess, I mean, yeah, an experienced wide receiving core. Yeah. Okay.
Number seven.
With all due respect, I think Tennessee at six is a good hopping off point because I don't know if you saw yesterday at DraftKings released the five early point spreads for Tennessee. So I think we can kind of spin off of Tennessee as a sixth. And, like, you got to look at some of the marquee games of the year and where Tennessee kind of matched up from a perception standpoint.
It's just, like, big SEC games, or is it?
North Carolina State and then your four big SEC games, Oklahoma, Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. So
what's that NC State line?
The five games that you care about right now, the point spreads are out for those, the initial ones. That kind of give you an idea of what the perception is of the programs. What's the North Carolina State when you ask? Yeah. What do you think it is? Because I think I nailed it from what I said a couple of months ago.
I don't really remember what you said.
I know, but I don't know if I even said it on air. But I just it feels right. It feels like where I thought it was going to be.
I don't remember.
I feel like NC State's a good team. I'm going to say like 3.5.
5.5.
Okay.
5.5.
All right, let me blow through these just by name, and that's it. So we wrap it up, and then we can go into that, because I agree. I think that's pretty intriguing to hear. Number seven was LSU. Number eight, Oklahoma. Number nine, Kentucky. A lot of love for Kentucky, man. Number 10, Texas A&M. Number 11, Florida. I think that's a lot of love for Florida. 12, Auburn. 13, South Carolina. 14, Arkansas. Poor Sam Pittman. 15, Mississippi State, and 16, Vanderbilt. So not many surprises towards the bottom, but
you said Oklahoma was what number?
Eight.
Tennessee at Oklahoma, point spread. Jace?
We'll go Tennessee minus 3.5.
Sam?
2.5, Tennessee.
Bob?
I'll go a little higher, 4.5.
Oklahoma minus 5. You guys were awful. Jace, that was terrible. Jace, that was so bad. You were off the point spread by like 9 points.
Well, I was way off.
But Bob doesn't get called out for going like, 4.5?
Well, Bob wasn't on a hot streak. Bob wasn't heating up. Bob didn't say, ball's back, heating up. Bob wasn't trying to go beer pong rules here on us. I was just letting you know you airballed. You threw it 5 feet off the table.
Don't
gotta keep your
respect for Oklahoma. I would think that'd be closer to like a pick'em, maybe.
Yeah,
like
I agree. I mean, I know it's a Norman and everything, but still.
I think I thought Oklahoma minus two and a half, something like that, just off the home field. But yeah, five seems steep. I get it. It's Nico's first road start, but that was a little bit of a head scratcher for me. Oklahoma minus 5.
That's Jackson Arnold's first year as a starter too.
Like, right, but home versus away.
Yeah, I know. But like,
I kind of understand that. But I think the spread's too high. Like, I think by the time the game actually rolls around, it'll go down. I think that'll get bet down. And I think when perception rolls around and Tennessee looks good against NC State, that'll be closer to a 2.5-point spread.
Well, clearly whoever set that number was not reading Will Backus's write-up.
It's true.
Because he'd know better.
Florida coming to Knoxville. Chance for redemption, Jace. Let's go.
I go Tennessee by a touchdown.
Okay.
I like that.
Bob?
Tennessee 8.5.
You win? still not very close, but minus 11, a double-digit spread right now for the Vols against the Gators. Does that surprise you? I mean,
kind of.
That feels like a game where you bet on Florida.
Double digits in any rivalry game scares me.
Yeah,
I just think, though, that some of that's just the PTSD we have from being Tennessee fans in the Florida series, you know? I think that's what leads you to that. I think Florida's not any good. I could see Tennessee running that.
They weren't any good last year either.
Home and away. Home and away.
Home and away.
Yeah.
But even 2 years ago, I mean, they weren't very good in Anthony Richardson's year either, and that was still one that you – we're up by 11, but then they get the backdoor cover at the end. You're up 18. I mean, you should have covered and blew them out, but they found a way to keep it close.
Graham Mertz is somebody I don't have a whole lot of confidence in either. I know he played great against Tennessee last season.
He really did, and that's so stupid.
Yeah.
He didn't make the throws. Like, I was like, some of those throws he made against us, like, what the hell is this? He's rolling out and just dropping perfectly on the sideline.
I know.
Third Saturday in October, Alabama comes into Knoxville. We'll do reverse order this time. Bob.
Tennessee minus 2.5.
Tennessee minus 2.5. Sam.
Tennessee minus 1.5.
Tennessee minus 1.5. Jace.
Alabama minus 3.
Jace wins. Alabama minus 2.
Wow.
Alabama coming in as a slight favorite, which it sounds like you guys are disappointed by that. I looked at that and said, that means the gap is pretty much closed in terms of perception and like thinking of that as a – because I think anytime you'll have a big big home game like that, bettors, the public, everyone's going to kind of look and say, yeah, it's a team the home team should win. I'll take the home team in that position.
I just think there's I also think, though, there's a correlation to optics on, in my opinion, on the coaching, too. You know, and I mean, I guess I don't disagree with DeBoer being a higher ranked coach than Heupel, but I just think that that's part of this too, that they feel he can walk into Knoxville and take Tennessee down.
I think we're still a bit of ways away from Alabama getting the full, like, hey, Nick Saban's gone.
Yeah,
we're going to quit giving them a little bit of the benefit of the doubt just because their roster's still going to be super talented. Now, I do think that ain't going to get much worse by the time the game rolls around. I wouldn't be shocked if Tennessee was favored, if Nico looks really good and Alabama has a little bit of the first year growing pains. I definitely don't think Alabama is going to be favored by much more than like 3 whenever they come. So if anything, I think it's more likely Tennessee's favored or it's a pick 'em by the time that game rolls around.
You said, is Kentucky not on there?
Kentucky's not on here. Tennessee and Georgia is, though. Tennessee's trip to Athens. Sam, you're up first this time.
I'm going to say Georgia minus like 14.
Jace.
Love Georgia.
I'll go Georgia minus 8.5.
Georgia minus 11.5.
Georgia minus 17.5.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one feels a little humbling. The Alabama one's like, okay, here we go. And then that one, I'm like, okay. So between being 5-point dogs at Oklahoma and 17.5-point dogs in Athens, it doesn't seem like they have a lot of confidence in Josh Heupel going on the road.
Vegas has seen his record on the road, yeah.
It does seem that way. It says like, hey, we got to deduct some points here for Heupel on the road. Mm-hmm. I think the North Carolina State line's right. That's about where I thought it would be. I think Alabama's about where I thought it would be. I think Florida's probably a little high, and I think Georgia, I would have been more where you were at, Sam, in terms of the 14.5. A 3-score game, but one where 17 covers for them, not where they have to beat you by 3 touchdowns, basically. Any impact on how you view the season right now as we sit here on May 7th between CBS having you as the 6th best team and the spreads I gave you?
No, I actually felt the 6 seed or 6 ranking was, I thought, pretty fair. I'm sure LSU fans would beg to differ, but I felt pretty good about that. And we're definitely expecting a Georgia loss, right? I mean,
yes.
That's let's just call it what it is.
For the foreseeable future. I will probably think we're going to lose to Georgia until we actually beat them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then losing to someone else, I believe, again, we've talked about that. Two losses still get you in the playoffs. I believe two losses is realistic. I just don't believe it's necessarily against Oklahoma. That's all. I'm not sure who it's against, but I don't know. That spread surprised me a little bit.
I'll just go through and you say whether or not you think Tennessee covers.
Okay.
-5.5 against North Carolina State.
I think they cover. State's good, but I think they cover.
I agree. +5 against Oklahoma.
I think they cover.
Agree. Home against Florida, -11.
I think they cover.
I'll probably say that Florida loses by 8 in that one. I'd probably take Florida in the 11. Alabama, -2. Tennessee, +2. Does Tennessee cover that game?
Come on, Bob. Let's smoke a cigar.
Yeah, I think they do.
+17.5 at Athens.
Do you agree on Alabama, though?
I agree on Alabama.
Okay.
I know I just talked about how talented they are, and I know I talked about Kalen DeBoer, but, like, I still don't trust Jalen Milroe on the road.
Yeah.
But, just to be fair, I don't think Ole Miss would have came in here and beat Tennessee this year either. I don't think I'd pick that either. And if we're just comparing those two teams again, I think Tennessee's going to be tough to beat at home, especially against this schedule.
Yeah.
There's only Georgia and Texas would I actually think would come into Knoxville and beat Tennessee. And you'd probably talk me into us beating Texas.
I was going to say, I think that just like the fan base in terms of like going UT versus UT, I think that would be a crazy crowd.
Honestly, I would probably still pick Tennessee to beat Texas at home. Like Georgia, like if they were coming in, I'd be like, yeah, we're going to lose that game. But like everyone else in the SEC this year, I expect to beat at home. And really, that's year in, year out. I think moving forward, that should be the expectation.
I mean, Heupel's proved that, right?
Yeah, I mean, like the home atmosphere is still great. I mean, 70,000 season tickets sold out. Like the vibes around the program should always be good at home. Josh Heupel's offense obviously works better at home. Even Joe Milton, I mean, did he lose a home game outside of Georgia?
Nope.
So I mean, like even he was able to win some games with 80 passing yards or whatever it was against A&M. Like, I think Josh Heupel's proven he's a good home coach. I think Tennessee's proven they're a good home atmosphere. Georgia's the only team I think can, unseat that. So, yeah, I think Tennessee, I'll pick them to beat Alabama right now.
Yeah.
Whether or not they do it, it's yet to be seen. But I'll pick that, especially as long as Jalen Milroe's there. 17.5 at Georgia.
The more I think about it, I'd say no. I just think Georgia has just turned them inside out 2 times in a row, and I'm not sold yet on Tennessee going down on the road and even keeping it close.
On that first time they got turned inside out, though, they did lose by only 14. So, I mean, 17.5, so many points.
They just looked so helpless, even though they only lost by 14, It was a tough one.
That's a game that you lose by 14, and you kind of look at the score, and you're like, man, I thought we lost that by 28.
Well, that's exactly what, man, that's exactly how the rain game went 2 years ago. Yeah. But it was raining. Keep in mind, it was raining.
Asterisk.
I'd probably lean towards us keeping it within 17.5. I don't say that with much confidence, especially until we see Nico as a starting quarterback. But, like, I'll say yes. So I got us 4-1 against the spread in those games. I think Florida, we would win by, like, 8. They get a garbage time touchdown or something. All right, let's play some overrated, underrated. Coming up next, stick with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Brought to you by our friends at Inward Half. Oh, it feels like a summer giveaway. Right now, go to Inward Half Golf on X for a chance to win a $100 shopping spree. You can pick something fresh from their new summer collection. That summer collection is launching on Friday, May 10th. To participate in the giveaway, make sure you're following Inward Half Golf on social media. Share the post and tag two individuals in the comments. The lucky winner will be chosen randomly on May 10th during the morning show. That's us on Fox Sports Knox. We will announce the winner on Friday. So go retweet, tag a couple of your friends. Jace, that includes you. It's part of your duty. You're one of our burner accounts now. You've got to go and pump up the sponsors before they realize, wait, that's just somebody that works at the station. So you're a sleeper cell. If I do it, they'll be like, oh, of course John's doing it. But you'll be like, wow, this looks great. And tag two of your friends. But come on, guys, retweet this. Then that'll bump you up to a C. You do a good job there. It goes from a C- to a C real fast. Enjoy the walk-in. Performance apparel with a traditional fit for the modern golfer. Inward Half. Facebook.com. And we're going to have golf on X if you want to get involved in this giveaway. All right, Sam, let's play some overrated, underrated.
Overrated. Very overrated.
It's overrated.
Overrated, my friend.
Overrated. I'm going to tell you why. I think that's a solid rated right there. It's perfect rated.
He underrated, man. He got some swag. He has some real swag.
Lobsters are underrated. They don't die.
Alrighty, we got a little bit of overrated, underrated here today. Starting off, overrated, underrated, home and home series.
I think they're underrated. Only from the perspective if you're the team on the losing end of the first one.
Okay.
Then you got a chance to go make it right the next time. And also, if they're consecutive years, sometimes they're not consecutive years, which, so I'm qualifying it. I'd say underrated with those qualifiers.
I like them. I'll go properly rated, though, maybe leaning towards overrated just because it seems like everyone loves them so much, and like to the point where they hate the neutral site games.
Okay.
Where if you get a neutral site game, it's like, oh, man, I wish it was a home and home instead. And you know, the neutral sites are still good, too. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still liking these teams playing. So I'll go it's a little overrated, maybe. A little overrated. But I like them. Okay. I love the home and home. But, like, I don't really want to go to, like, Virginia. You know what I mean? Like, a home and home against that type of opponent, just give me the one-off neutral site. I didn't really – I mean, would you have really wanted to go to Virginia Tech or play the battle at Bristol a couple years ago, Bob? Because Virginia Tech's like it's kind of borderline. There's enough tradition. You get to see Inter Sandman. Like they had some things, but at the same time, Battle of Bristol is pretty cool. Which one would you have preferred?
I would have preferred going to Blacksburg.
Okay. Especially when you add a Knoxville game to it too.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the cutoff for me. Like BYU, I think people would have talked themselves into going to BYU. I kind of view that trip as better than Blacksburg, but like
for don't a lot we of these have teams, one with Washington coming up. Or did that get canceled?
What's up?
Do we have one with Washington coming up, or did that get canceled?
I feel like we do have one with Washington coming up.
I feel like we do.
Now, maybe, like you said, since they went to the Big Ten, maybe they have reconsidered and said, hey, the schedule's going to be too tough. We don't have to do this. And, you know, Oklahoma and Texas are coming. We don't have to do this. But I do remember us announcing something.
Because I remember it being like, oh, the two teams on the water type thing. Yeah.
Right.
I just felt, particularly Bristol, I felt was a gimmick, too. You know, it's just.
It's a pretty cool gimmick, though.
Yeah.
At least I thought so. I mean, that was one I didn't, like, wasn't excited for leading up to it. And, like, even, like, Friday afternoon had not planned on going, but I got, a last-minute ticket and went. I was glad I went. I thought it was pretty fun.
Was, like, the viewing experience decent? Being, like, that big of a stadium and stuff
Yeah, I don't remember it being anything, like,
bad.
Yeah, like, I won't say it was, like, great, but I don't remember. I wasn't, like, super high up, I don't guess, but, like, I was fine with it. But, like, North Carolina State, would you rather go to Raleigh or just do this one-off?
That'd be good doing it in Charlotte.
That's kind of where I'm at with them. Like they're on the wrong side of the cutoff. I got no interest in going there.
Got to have a little bit of tradition. Like if they didn't have the Inter Sandman, I'd be out on Virginia Tech too, I think.
And honestly, at this point, I'd be out on Virginia Tech. I was looking from a 2016 lens. Like,
okay, just like their program at the time?
Yeah, if you told me like right now in 2024, I'm like locking in. I don't have any interest in going to Blacksburg right now.
Sure.
But like in 2016, they still had a little bit of juice. I don't think they have any juice at all anymore. So I'll go home and home's a little overrated because everyone's like, oh, I love them so much. I hate neutral sites.
Okay.
Now, from a Tennessee like home perspective, I think having good home games is cool. So maybe if you factor that in, maybe you can get me to go the other way to play advocate to myself. Not the devil, Bob. I don't play it. I'm arguing with myself here. I'm not arguing on the behalf of the devil. Next topic.
Okay. Overrated, underrated. Singing in the car.
By the way, 2029, 2030, it's still showing up on future schedules for the Washington trip.
Gotcha.
Home in 29 at Washington and 30 is what they're saying right now. I love singing in the car, man. Singing in the car is underrated. I love singing anywhere, though. So, like, maybe the car in particular is a little overrated, I guess, to argue with myself again. That's like singing. Car's fun. You belt it out. Mm-hmm. The window's down.
Yeah.
good summer day, good spring day, start sneezing, then you almost wreck because your allergies and the pollen get in, and you're like, oh my God, this is miserable. Why am I rolling the windows down to sing some Halsey? She's got so much hate for that man, you know what I mean? Like, she made a whole record about how wrong he did her, and, you know, you kind of got to respect that, and she really has some passion. I like singing women's songs, Bob.
I got you.
I sing women's songs in the car more than men's songs. I don't really like singing men's songs. But get me some Adele, some Amy Winehouse, some Miley, some Halsey, and let me put my woman playlist on, and I'm really belting it out. Some Alicia Keys. Not really This Girl Is On Fire. That would be a good one, but, like, you know, those type of songs. Since You've Been Gone, shout out to Kelly Clarkson. Give her some love, too.
It's kind of pop.
Well, yeah, there's still women. Yeah.
I think we need a 37 Club little.
I can't sing.
Oh, no.
I can't.
I don't think anyone was expecting you to be John Legend.
No, it's bad. It's bad, though. It's bad.
A little carpool karaoke.
Do you like Haim?
No. Did you hear them on my list of people I sing, Bob? Because I listed a lot of people, so.
They're talented. That's why I thought maybe you would.
Those are the sisters that play guitars and everything, yeah. Right? Like, I think they're talented, but I don't really know any of their songs.
Yeah.
To belt out to.
I put together some additional, just to refresh, bump music and stuff. I got a little of them in there.
Okay.
I'm gonna share with Sam if he can, since he's lacking in some of his intro music.
I think I always pronounce them as Haim.
I don't. It's a good question. It could be Haim.
Oh, too. Okay. I don't know if it's right. I'm the last person about pronunciations anybody should listen to. I just go off vibes. I probably call them the same, different things in the same conversation. Cover my bases.
I think it's underrated. I choose to have the windows up when I do that because then you feel like you're in a little studio.
Ooh, you control the sound. You don't want to. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Then you don't have to worry about any pollen getting in or anything else. You know. Yeah, you feel like it's like you're really performing, like you're laying some tracks. It's good.
I can't breathe for the first time. That's a good one.
It's a pretty good falsetto. Mm-hmm. Not bad.
What's your go-to? I gave you mine. What are yours?
Oh God. It could be a little bit of anything, really. I'm not necessarily all about female ones. I like JT, man. I like Timberlake. I like, but then I can.
You're
run
singing a little sexy back as you're driving around.
Not necessarily sexy
I'm
back.
I'm ringing the sexy back.
yeah.
No, like I love that that collab he did with Chris Stapleton.
Okay.
That's, you know, he does so many different things.
And you got tickets to the concert together.
Drink you away. Well, no, not together.
Well, we're sort of together. We're both going.
Same arena.
We're both lower level. The sections are pretty close, too. Like,
yeah, that's true.
It's not far off.
Hopefully it won't be like basketball, right?
Yes, I agree, because I don't want to be at the concert next to you either.
I want you to be comfortable. Do your thing.
Yeah, I was about to be offended by that, but I think I said the same thing. The basketball was... It was not awkward. It was fine. I did see you leave early.
I did say Bob leaves the concert early.
But then I left early the next time after we were losing to Kentucky. I got out of Kentucky early. I was like, it was my birthday. I had to go do something. Yeah. So I was like, I don't want to get caught in traffic. It was a whole thing. But I did have to be on my best behavior. I don't want to be on my best behavior at a concert. I like to drink and dance. And
But I'm also – but I run the game.
Bring it to the chorus.
I kind of run the gamut. I'm a big Lyle Lovett fan, for example. Love him, too.
Who the hell is Lyle Lovett?
Seriously?
I had a friend named Josh Lovett growing up.
No, Lyle Lovett is...
I've heard that name. I don't know.
Super talented. Kind of a honky-tonk guy. He's super talented. Plays Knoxville a lot. He loves Knoxville. Used to be married to Julia Roberts.
If he loves Knoxville, then I love him.
Yeah. So, he just runs the gamut. All of that to say... I think it's underrated. I enjoy it. I like to sing in the car.
Sam, do you know Lyle Lovett?
I don't, no.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't.
At least I don't feel super dumb then, because Bob just looked at me like I was an idiot. Seriously?
I like the name, though.
It's a cool name.
Intrigues me for sure.
Cool name.
I might listen to him in the car.
He's one of these guys, too. If you ever see him live, he performs and talks, but he is funny as hell. I mean, he's got a great sense of humor. His shows are great. He's... Yeah, you know, comes with his large band, which is horns, and I mean they're great. He's a super talented guy, and like I said, has had some interesting wives: Julia Roberts, Elizabeth Vargas, who used to be an ABC News anchor. He's made the rounds.
Maybe we'll go to a Lyle Lovett concert, too. Mm-hmm. Add that to a list. First Timberlake, then some Lyle Lovett.
I'll take you to a Lyle Lovett show. He comes here about once a year. So,
perfect. Sam?
All right. Overrated, underrated, continental breakfast.
No thanks. Overrated. Like, my rule is the continental breakfast, if I want to go in there and see if they got like a blueberry muffin, I'll go grab one of those. But that's about it. When I was younger, if they had some cereal, maybe I had some cereal. But my rule now is if they don't have a muffin, I'm just going to walk next door to, like, there's going to be a McDonald's somewhere. There's going to be something better. I'm going to pick up that, a chicken biscuit, do something else. No thanks. I get the concept of it being free and, like, hey, you feel like you have to take advantage of it. But, like, it never fills me up. It's, you're playing roulette in terms of whether or not it's going to make you sick or feel bad and whether it's going to be good. I'd rather just go pay $3 for a biscuit and be on my way.
Big overrated for me. Don't like it. Breakfast needs to be a more regal thing. You know what I mean? Nice, warm stuff.
Why do they do the eggs that way? How are the eggs so bad at these breakfast places? No, like,
because it's powder.
Yeah, no, but like, why? Is that just that much easier?
I mean,
what goes into powder eggs, I guess? Is cost efficient? You think that's it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably like a nickel for like a box of a carton of powdered eggs, but then you're paying.
Then just charge me $1 for the breakfast. Charge everybody $1 for the breakfast. Like,
I think people would pay an upcharge for fresh eggs.
I agree. I would. Like, I don't want to go to a free breakfast that's bad. I'd rather pay $3 and go to a breakfast that's good. Like, or just add it to the room. Breakfast charge. Add it to everybody.
$10.
No, just $3. Scrambled eggs aren't more than that. Just $3. They're given away for free. Like, those eggs can't be that much. I'm not saying you have to improve the sausage and everything. Just improve the eggs. Just improve the eggs. And maybe have someone running the waffle machine so I don't have to go there and try to figure it
out.
Would
you eat other parts of the continental breakfast if the eggs were better?
Yes.
See,
because okay, so I love eggs.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we got an interpretation issue, though. See, I've always felt continental breakfast is more like muffins, bagels, cereal,
the to-go stuff.
As a matter of fact,
there's not eggs on a continental breakfast.
No, like eggs is maybe there. Maybe I'm saying this is my interpretation of it. In the studio business, when you're doing shoots and stuff, they call it a walking breakfast, where you come in and you get your, again, maybe a yogurt, maybe a muffin, maybe, because it means you come in and you eat while you kind of still do work.
You know, Bob's right. He's obviously the smart one here that's traveled more, but he says continental breakfast, fruit juice, bread, coffee, and tea. As a rule of thumb, a continental breakfast usually doesn't have hot food like eggs or sausages.
Learn something new every day.
I just think any breakfast at hotels or continental
you're
breakfast.
Talking about
overrated, hotel, underrated, yeah, breakfast buffet at a hotel.
Yeah, free hotel breakfast.
I mean, I like muffins, so like if they got good muffins, then I'll say properly rated, but that's the only thing of those things I want. I'm not really a fruit guy in the morning. I like my fruit, but not for breakfast.
But that's why I said that earlier. I think it's overrated because I feel like breakfast can be a really, really great meal, and Continental is just kind of a cheap way out, in my opinion. It's lazy.
Thanks for exposing me as an idiot this segment, Bob. I don't know who Lyle Lovett is, and I don't know what a continental breakfast is. I'm uncultured. I'm uncultured swine, okay? Is that what you want me to admit?
No.
Much like that breakfast, there's a little piggy here. He's a swine, and he's uncultured. It's me. Oink, uncultured swine.
These voices you do.
Last call on the other side. Stick with us.